one question. The private sector and competition moving forward. What roles do you see for the private sector and competition in a new world of augmented supplies?
Good question, and thank you for it. The starting point, I guess, from a Victorian government perspective is we've always said that the basic principle that underlies the ownership of Victoria's water itself is that it must remain in public hands, and we've enacted that in the Victorian Constitution. So that's a very important starting principle, but nevertheless, in the delivery of the extensive range of infrastructure augmentations which I've outlined, we would expect and welcome a very significant level of private sector involvement. That's not to be I don't think that's a very surprising observation. You would see that already we've announced a public-private partnership for desalination. And, of course, we are working with private partners through our water authorities on a whole range of different augmentations, which I've just outlined. In terms of the water market itself and some of the next steps in relation to that, I would make the observation that the water market at the moment is in its infancy, and it's a difficult time to judge where it will go in the future, reflecting on it as we are in a very stressed environment. Drought is perhaps not the best time to be reflecting on the efficiency of the market, although it's the time where sometimes the existence of that market can have the most benefits. And nevertheless, trying to set up that system in a drought-affected period is quite complex, and we've had to manage some of those water trading arrangements accordingly. So we would expect to see a high level of private sector involvement in many aspects of those, but I think it's probably a little bit early to reflect comprehensively on the water trading arrangements and where we would expect those to go in the future.
Peter Duncan, Minister. Two questions, if I may. One of them is a smaller question, but almost as a throwaway. You said this water is recycled and therefore won't be used for drinking purposes. And, of course, we know that's a very controversial issue. In London, it's said that water passes through the human body about 9 times. So I wonder if you just care to comment on that. It seems clear that this is far more a political than a substantive issue, and yet it's an immense waste of a resource. Second question is, I wonder if you care to comment on the vexed question of Victoria's position as the standout state against the Howard government's Murray-Darling scheme. Thanks.
In relation to drinking of recycled water, the government has on successive occasions ruled out the necessity for Victorians to drink recycled water. And just to explain the context for that, I think a lot of people think that because we're not drinking recycled water, that therefore we're not recycling any water. And you'd see from that presentation that that's not the case. There is extensive use of recycled water for many different uses as part of Victoria's water system. The question is whether it is necessary for us to drink it, and the short answer is it's not necessary. If you look at the augmentation strategies we have in place, we will have more than enough water to meet our domestic needs going forward, and we don't need to draw on recycled water for drinking purposes. But secondly, recycled water for drinking is extremely expensive, and we have to weigh up that against the other sorts of projects that we can support. I'd simply make the point that getting recycled water to a sort of Class A or Class B level so that it can be used for sporting fields or to replace a potable water supply that's being used for some other purpose can be done and managed from within our existing financial commitments. Treating large amounts of recycled water to a point where we could drink it and then trying to manage our system so that that water was efficiently used for that and only for that purpose would actually be quite complex and expensive. And so I'd actually put a real question mark over the desirability of that from an economic perspective and whether there aren't more effective things we can be doing. So I wouldn't say that ruling out the drinking of recycled water is a political response. I would say it is as much an economic response as it is a political response. Secondly, you asked about where we're at in terms of the national discussions about the federal takeover of the Murray-Darling system. Victoria has said from the outset the Commonwealth sprung their plan on us earlier this year. God bless their cotton socks. But nevertheless, we had to respond at the time, and we said that we were supportive of a greater level of Commonwealth involvement in the Murray-Darling Basin, but we did not support a full takeover as contemplated by the Commonwealth. And the reason why we don't is because for a long time, Victoria has managed its water resources efficiently with a high level of security, which has promoted investment across a whole range of different agricultural and horticultural projects throughout this state, which have underpinned our export base and underpinned the economic strength of Victoria. The system that the Commonwealth contemplates will create a high level of uncertainty. What it will also do is provide a fund which can be used to purchase over-allocated water in New South Wales. And those that fund, which Victorian taxpayers will help contribute to, will then be used by potentially by cotton, rice barons and others, to purchase high-security Victorian water on the open market. And from a Victorian perspective, we just can't contemplate a situation where a Commonwealth takeover is used to facilitate an outcome of that type. We want to see greater certainty. We have a great commitment to market-based principles, but on the basis of predictability and certainty, not on the basis of arbitrary, ill-considered Commonwealth interventions, which are designed to achieve political outcomes in an election year or whatever it might be. We've seen most recently the Commonwealth come and say that they want to create a massive 200-plus gigalitre water quality reserve to meet Adelaide's needs, unknown as they are, for next year. This water would come from Victorian irrigators who are currently receiving the lowest allocations they've ever received in the nation's history. And we just cannot understand, well, we can understand, it's about politics. It's about meeting the needs of marginal seats in South Australia, not about meeting the national interest of what works best for a national scheme in the Murray-Darling system. And if we had surrendered our powers, as the Commonwealth sought, they would not need Victoria's permission to now create that water quality reserve. They'd be able to do it unilaterally. So thank goodness Victoria held out. Other states are now recognising the wisdom of Victoria's stance. So we'll continue to negotiate and work with the Commonwealth, but we don't support a unilateral takeover on the basis that they proposed.
Can we take a question from the left-hand side of the room now?
Thank you, Minister. Anna Stefanatis from Philip Morris Limited. Over recent years, Philip Morris has achieved significant energy savings, including reductions in water usage. Since 2004, the company has reduced our average monthly water use by 44%, including through improved monitoring technology and the introduction of a waterless urinal system. Our energy team is looking at further improvements under WaterMap, including on-site capture and reuse of stormwater runoff. And my question is, what opportunities are there for industry collaboration to get together to share ideas and experience and to learn best practice solutions?
It's a good question, and I emphasised in the presentation the recognition that the government gives to industry for the measures that they've already taken. Water maps will take us to the next level, and those water maps need to be, for the top 2,100 users, need to be concluded and lodged and registered by the 31st of December of this year. We see lots of opportunities for industry to collaborate around best practice in this area. I know water authorities already on their websites include water savings tips for non-residential water users. I know that they also conduct forums and seminars across the metropolitan area for non-residential water users to come together and share best practice. And our industry associations are also pretty active. I know Vecchi have a set of measures around Grow Me the Money, which includes sustainability and water reduction tips and best practice. And the Australian Industry Group has seminars and I think a website which supports some of their activities as well. So there is a huge amount of activity in this area, and I would encourage companies such as Philip Morris and others who are looking at further strategies that they can embark upon to participate perhaps in some of those seminars, share their learnings, but also see what other companies have been doing to reduce their water consumption.
Thank you.
Thanks for the question.
There's a supplementary question on the right-hand side now.
Minister, thank you for such a detailed and powerful presentation. Thinking back from the water crisis to the earlier oil energy crisis in the 70s, until oil prices were deregulated, people were pulling guns at petrol and gas stations around the world. The deregulation of the oil price was pivotal in solving a crisis of the 1970s and beyond. We discussed water today, but Hamlet has been played, but the prince hasn't been mentioned. Pricing. Pricing, you're talking about the interconnections and so forth. But until water pricing starts to reflect scarcity, and you say it's a very tough time to introduce it, and things are happening, could you tell us really how the government, how you see pricing reforms coming in the next decade? Because if something is really scarce, like air or water, it has to be priced. At the moment, price doesn't get it, seem to get a Guernsey.
Well, firstly, I agree, the Victorian government agrees that price has an important role to play in managing a lot of the issues that we'll face going forward. We've said that as a consequence of the measures that we have already announced and taken, that we would expect prices to double over the pricing period for both regional water corporations but also for metropolitan water users. And over the pricing period, I mean prices doubling over the next 5 years. In a Melbourne context, we received pricing proposals from our water retailers earlier this year, which at least in a couple of instances went beyond that in terms of the price impact, and for that reason we intervened and we have capped the price increase for next year. I know this won't please you in terms of the underlying thesis that you were taking, but it's important in terms of providing some context. Capped the price increase for next year so that prices will double over the next 5 years, but only double. We've asked VCEC, the Victorian Competition and Efficiency Commission, to look at the metropolitan retail structure to advise on the best possible structure going forward, and taking into account that pricing stipulation. We've also asked the Essential Services Commission, which plays the role as price regulator, to look not only at all of the regional water corporation plans in the way they ordinarily would, but to look at the retail water price proposals from our retail metropolitan retailers. And they're doing that at the moment. They'll look at tariff structures. They'll look at a whole range of equity issues as well as the prices themselves. I guess what I would say more generally is... It's certainly the case that in the past the price of water has basically reflected the historical cost of the infrastructure that's provided it, and it's worth reflecting on whether that's the most effective way of doing so. But it's also worth reflecting on what the most appropriate mechanism for regulating prices is. With water trading, we will see inevitably a more deregulated pricing scheme. We're seeing that at the moment on the temporary market. At the moment, a megalitre of water costs about $1,000, which is extraordinary when you compare it to, you know, it was 30 or 40 bucks a meg only 12 or so months ago. And we've tried to put in place mechanisms which enable water to reach its sort of natural price point in a stressed water environment at the moment. And the water market enables us to do some of those things, undeveloped as the market is. But I don't think we're in a position at the moment to move to a fully deregulated pricing structure. We don't have a fully competitive supply system at the moment. We need to reflect on the realities of that. I think the Essential Services Commission does a commendable job in terms of providing a transparent and accountable pricing mechanism.
Thank you, Minister. Rodney Wangman, Mayor, City of Wodonga. A couple of quick points for you. Thank you for taking on the challenge, which is very large indeed.
I wasn't given a choice, you realise.
I suspected that, but I think everyone in this room can see the passion at which you're trying to actually resolve through this. I suppose that would then lead me to my next comment, which is please keep an open mind to this, because no matter at any point along this journey that you travel, will you find that there is one solution to all this. Wodonga, as you'd be well aware, having had recent visits along the Murray, is at the headwaters of that catchment, and in fact the seven regional shires that are in our area capture 72% of the water that goes into the Murray system. That creates some unique situations for us as we watch a lot of the water flow past us, and we think about the Barmah choke and all those things and the pipeline that you've inferred there. But there are probably two critical points at the moment. As the water trading takes place, I foreshadow that you've already been told about what that means in terms of local government rate take along the river, how that might in fact impact on the value of land, farming, etc. in terms of local government. Further to that, I think we could demonstrate already, and you've probably heard this through your various water authorities, that the savings that are being undertaken locally, if you could allow those water authorities more autonomy to let local conditions then dictate what that water might be used for. What I mean by that in simple terms is where we still sit on stage four restrictions, and there is a policy framework that says stage four should exist along the river, with exemptions, we know in our own city that we are already making substantial savings that would allow our city to actually move back to lighter restrictions. I would encourage you to keep an open mind with the autonomy of your water authorities and maybe give them more opportunity for that regard, where savings can be shown, because commercially our city is in a competitive market against many others around both Victoria and around Australia, and one of the key matters that can hold us back is having stage four restrictions applied to our provincial city versus other provincial cities that don't have similar restrictions against them. So that would be my hope and aspiration for you. My question to you is, would you consider in the future greater local autonomy to your water authorities where they can prove and show in evidence the savings that both residential and industrial farming communities can prove and to show for you?
Sure. Well, Rodney, firstly, thanks for the question. There are a couple of different points that I'll address, but your key question was around autonomy. And I would say that, firstly, it's worth recognising that our regional water corporations, whilst they're government-appointed, they exercise a very high level of autonomy. Water restrictions in regional areas are not set by the government. They're set by water authorities themselves, and they reflect the prevailing water conditions in those areas. And we've seen in recent weeks an easing of water restrictions along many of the Murray towns, and it's puzzling for many people coming to terms with that, because where there's less water than there's ever been, and yet water restrictions are being eased, and what it does is it reflects the judgments being made by water authorities about the prevailing water availability and the desirability of those restrictions. And I encourage that. We haven't intervened in any of those decisions. We've encouraged those towns, those water authorities, to make those judgments for those towns based on their own local knowledge and on the prevailing conditions there. And so, in a sense, that supports the proposition that autonomy is important. You mentioned the challenges for local government as we move to water trading, and people may or may not be aware that the government has allowed the unbundling of water from property values. That takes effect from the 1st of July 2008. It creates challenges for local councils, and for those councils most affected, the government announced $18 million worth of transitional assistance last week when we were in Kerrang to support councils making that transitional process. Nevertheless, it's totally consistent with the government's policy framework to enable water to be traded, that water must be unbundled from the land component, otherwise you just can't facilitate a full and open market where water can transfer to its most productive economic use. So we recognise the challenges that's creating for local government, but we also recognise that this is a very important reform in terms of enabling, giving effect to that policy of water trading.
Thank you. I look forward to talking to you further.
Thanks. Thanks, Rodney. I can see I've changed your mind.
We have a question from this side of the room now.
Peter Johnston, City of Burundara, Minister. I guess a follow-up question of pretty much the same nature about the involvement of local communities in some of the decisions on water restrictions, and I'd like to give an example. Whilst we all support the need for those targets that you've adopted in those, the government's adopted in those restrictions, one of the impacts of the restrictions, as you know, is that three quarters of sports grounds are unable to be watered. Now, in the case of the city of Burundara, we're spending up to $1 million per year of ratepayers' funds to purchase and transport in recycled water in order to preserve social capital associated with sports grounds. In other words, we believe that there are going to be very serious dysfunctions in the community if young people aren't able to play sport. Now, we also believe that it's possible to find that water in other ways, and that priorities really demand that we look at ways of keeping those sports grounds watered, because many local governments, particularly in rural areas, aren't able to. My question essentially is, are you prepared to talk with local governments about ways in which we can cooperate with you in better local means of achieving the water restriction targets?
Yeah, thanks for the question, Peter, and I would say, firstly, yes, we are willing to have that dialogue. In fact, we welcome it. There are some initiatives that we're reflecting on at the moment that would give councils greater levels of autonomy in making those decisions around how they can protect and preserve essential community infrastructure. The message that we hear loud and clear when we travel around the state is that particularly in drought-stressed communities, sporting infrastructure is absolutely critical to maintaining that sense of community spirit and community life, which is very important to them. There are a range of projects that have already embarked on with local councils. In fact, the one that comes most readily to mind from my perspective is the Nillumbik Water Smart Sports Ground Initiative, which has seen them invest some state government money as well as some local council money in protecting some of their sporting grounds, and that's included facilitating the transfer to warm season grasses on some of those grounds, the installation of subsurface drip systems, which are irrigation systems which use about 65% less water than the previous irrigation systems, and finally the use of Class B recycled water in Nillumbik's case out from the Brushy Creek treatment plant, which has been able to be used on sporting grounds where otherwise potable water would have been used. So that's a great example in their case of how they've been able to apply that. I think they're applying it to 4 sporting grounds at the moment. And we'd welcome partnerships with local councils to further those sorts of projects. But more generally, we would like to see local communities being able to make more decisions at the local level about how they protect sporting infrastructure.
Thanks, Minister.
Probably have time for one or maybe 2 more questions. So one from that side.
Okay. G'day, Tim. John Fidel, just Central Highlands Water.
How are you, John?
I'm just interested in a little bit about the water restriction policy at the moment, and in particular Melbourne staying on stage 3A,
yep,
regardless of water levels.
Yep.
And just to me, it sort of poses 2 questions. One is there seems to be a lack of confidence in the traditional stage 4 policy, given that we're on 3A,
yep,
and also a lack of confidence in the traditional water restriction triggers, given that we're staying on 3A regardless of water level. Just sort of your comments and whether a review was likely, I guess.
Well, I mean, firstly, what I would say is just to repeat the points I made in the presentation, which is that the previous policy was very arbitrary, and in fact wasn't being used anyway. The creation of Stage 3A as a trigger point was in itself a recognition by the previous minister of the inadequacy of the current trigger levels and the arbitrary way in which they worked. You're from Central Highlands, John, so I don't need to tell you about the impact that Stage 4 restrictions have on communities in terms of it's basically there's no outdoor watering of any kind, so sporting grounds die, gardens die, community assets die. And so making that transition is a big decision for any community. And I note and I welcome the fact that many regional water corporations are now easing those Stage 4 water restrictions by modifying them in different ways, which are not that different from the Stage 3A restrictions in some respects. And I know Colobin have done that. I know many of the towns along the Murray have done that. And as I say, we welcome that. You ask about what it means for Stage 4 water restrictions going forward. I'd simply repeat the comments that we made last week, and that is that at the moment, if we had the current system of triggers still operating in place, Melbourne would be jumping backwards and forwards between different water restriction levels from month to month. And we've achieved a huge amount in encouraging people to use less water and to obey the restriction levels rules that are in place. And people have responded magnificently to that. And if we jump the restrictions backwards and forwards on a month-to-month basis, people will have no idea what the restrictions are in place at a given time. In fact, if I went around this room and I asked people to name all of the Stage 3A restriction rules, I bet people would struggle to do it because they are complex, and changing them on a month month-to-month basis to reflect arbitrary trigger points in the storages without any regard to the long-term storage levels and where they're likely to go on a seasonal basis, I think is just hopeless. So our view is that we're on stage 3A, even though we ought to be on stage 2 right now. And so people are banking some savings. We're banking some savings at the moment. Later on, when we ought to be maybe on stage 4, if we reach that point under the previous policy, we'll be drawing down on some of those savings, and I think that's a logical position to be in. And if other water corporations around Victoria want to reach the same conclusion about their own storages, then we welcome them doing so. Some have done so already, provided it's a scientific decision based on storage levels and not just something, a decision someone makes when they wake up in the morning. Then we would welcome that. And we, as I say, the decision I made about Stage 3A was based on advice from the water corporations here in Melbourne.